Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm going to record this just so if anyone didn't remember everything they heard, they could listen to it later. I think I was invited because they needed someone to put board in board meeting. Oh, yeah, that was a pretty lame joke, wasn't it? Okay, so we're going to talk about memory today. You may know there's no PowerPoint. Research shows PowerPoints reduce memory of what you learn. So, to the point, I didn't bring it. Actually, I was too lazy to make one. But the research is true. It actually does reduce memory of what you're learning. The handouts are great, potentially. But yeah, and bio ones, yes, I work for Fond du Lac County. I'm a psychologist there. I represent Fond du Lac County. They're the ones that are lending me out to do that today. I do a lot of speaking engagements privately, too. So you may see me at times do some kind of community engagement speaking where I'm not a county employee in that sense. I do have a website. I thought forever to find a good creative name for it. It's espenclausen.com. I named it such so that I can remember what my name is. But yes, you can go there. I'm going to upload when I have a chance. I'll upload the recording of this talk there too. Yes, there's some recordings of past talks and some various things I do. For the county, I do individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy. I do inpatient work, outpatient work, psychological assessments, consult for social services. Privately, I do trainings for group homes and various organizations and consultations. And I'm sure I'm the mental health side of the Juvenile Firesetter program. I'm the psychologist for the PACE program within juvenile detention, where we're starting to get more and more kids from various other counties, and I'm sure I'm forgetting half a dozen roles I have, so I stay busy. And actually, one of the things I have to make sure of is that I remember things, which is useful not just with clients, but because I have so many things to do. So a lot of the things I'll talk about today that you should do, I have to do myself just to stay sane. Most of what I'll talk about today will go along the memory process that's happening in our brain. So I organize the talk accordingly. The way we create memories, most of it goes through the following process. We get sensory information. The sensory information gets processed in the various processing centers of the brain. That information has to be passed on to a working memory, and part of what is in working memory will make its way into long-term memory, which is what most of us think of as memory. And every step of the way, we lose a lot of information. And a lot of the things I'll talk about today that's helpful with memory is how do you not lose information and how do you make sure you keep the information you need every step of the way. So that will be organization of the talk. Now, I just flew through those, but we'll spend a lot more time on each. Okay, but before I go into these, there's some real basic things to keep in mind to improve your memory or keeping your memory good. One of the most important is, one of the biggest mistakes we make with our memory is to assume it's good. One of the best things you can do for your memory is to not trust your memory. Do things to remember. If you ever tell yourself, oh, I'll remember that. No. That's when you need to. And we all have examples of things like, I wonder where I should put this. I really need to remember where I put this. So I'm going to put it in a smart place. Which is so smart, you can't find it again. I can't find it. I know I put it in a smart place. Yep. We've all done there. It used to be an ongoing issue with me. Is now a non-issue. Because anyone guess how I fixed it? No, I don't remember it. I did not trust my brain to remember it. Whenever I put something in a smart place, I take a picture with my phone. If I can't find something and put a smart place, I just have to swipe through my pictures. There's a lot of tools in our smartphone now that really helps if we know how to use it. Another big principle with good memory is, and of course, almost any mental health talk will bring this in eventually, good diet. Your brain only works as well as your diet is. You do need to have a good diet. Some forms of dementia are caused purely by bad diet. One I'll mention in particular just because it illustrates it. Anyone heard about Wernicke-Korsakoff's dementia? It's a bad one because it often sets in quite early. Sometimes sets in the 40s, 60s, can be earlier. Is mostly found among heavy beer drinkers. Does anyone remember Miller Lite? When this commercial, well, when the following commercial was out, I actually lived literally next door to Miller Brewery. But it used to be this Miller commercial that says, Miller Lite, less filling. Well, here's the problem with beer. There's a lot of problems with beer. I know I'm in Wisconsin. I'm about to be chased out of here. But there's a lot of problems with beer. One of the big problems with beer is actually that it is filling. The commercial, now less filling, meant you could drink more beer. A lot of beer alcoholics struggle with the issue of, I want to drink more, but I'm full. Okay, I don't mean that actually to be funny. It's actually a major issue. Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome is usually found among heavy beer drinkers or former heavy beer drinkers because they went years without eating food. Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome is actually caused by a deficiency of the trace mineral vitamin thiamine. And you don't need much of it. The problem is if you go years without eating normal food, you don't get that trace amount, plus beer sucks it out. And yes, I've worked with people, and I see them way too often in our inpatient unit. I work with people who have not eaten solid food in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And yes, that's going to impair your memory. Goes without saying, I'm not going to talk too much about the following further today, but yes, most substance abuse does mess with memory. So a good way to have better memory, stay away from street drugs. One of our biggest culprits these days for memory issues is marijuana. It does appear to cause some issues with memory. Alcohol, of course, also causes issues with memory. Alcohol usually only causes issues with memory because someone drank it long term and got something like Wernicke-Korsakoff, and it causes memory problems when you drank too much and you black out. Marijuana, on the other hand, does tend to cause memory issues even when the person is not high. They may have memory impairment for a week or two after having had a blunt. So, but I'm going to stay off the soapbox regarding drugs for the rest of this session, I think. Sometimes I get tricked back in there by my own mind. Another big thing that's, you go to a good mental health talk, in addition to diet, they're going to bring up this at some other point, exercise. The more fit you are, the better blood flow you get to your brain. It improves a lot while you're exercising, but in general, if you're fit, you have a better blood flow, your brain works better, you lay down memories better. Exercise fitness is extremely important. I used to believe that, wow, chess wants to be an Olympic sport. Why should that be an Olympic sport? It's not a sport. It's a game, but it's not a sport. But I've actually changed my mind after learning that all the top chess players are extremely fit. And why are they extremely fit? Because their brain doesn't work well enough if they're not extremely fit. And people often don't know, competitive high-level chess requires a lot of memorization and knowledge and being able to retrieve that at the right point. So they have to be buff, they have to be fit in order to do that. So it's not entirely just a mind game. You have to be an athlete physically to be able to do chess. Okay, so exercise, very important. Okay, now let's start getting into that chain I put on the board here. Sensory to processing center, working memory, long-term memory. Now, I'm not using a microphone except the one I'm taping with here. I'm loud enough? Okay, someone wondered, are you soft-spoken? No. I've been accused of many things. Soft-spoken is not one of them. You should hear me sing in church. Okay. We have a sensory memory. Our senses actually have memory. But it's not very long. It's something, various different senses have a different length of memory, but all of them tap out at half a second. So not much. But things are stored there momentarily. And before you ask, okay, there's a lot of science fiction shows and even detective shows that are based on the notion of, oh, yeah, well, the last thing you see before you're dead is still stored in your sensory memory in your eyes. No, it's not. Well, it is for half a second. So if you had some kind of computerized wonderful thing to maybe get in there and capture it within a half second of the person dying, then maybe you could get it, but then you probably saw what happened anyway. So, not much of a memory. However, our senses become some of the most important for your memory, because how you set, guide, direct your senses is going to set you up for what you actually remember. If you're not fully sensory tuned into what you're going to remember, you're losing most of the information off the bat. Also, we don't want to put in too much competing sensory information when you're not getting enough. If any of you have a kid or husband, or you might consider your husband the kid, and you're telling them something while they have the video game controller in their hand, and they're fully looking at you, and they're clearly paying no attention to the screen, no attention to the video game controller, the fact that the video controller is in their hand forces the brain to be focused on the video game, because it's taking in video game related sensory information. So that's occupying part of the brain that's supposed to be focused on you, because you know it's all about you. So we want to get that focused. There's actually a lot of things that has to do with politeness and good assertiveness skills that actually has to do with memory. For example, good assertiveness means that you have eye contact. When you have eye contact, and they give you eye contact back, it greatly increases the chance that both of you will remember the information that's now being exchanged between you. Because sensory-wise, you're not actually just adjusting your eyes in. You're also now tuning in your ears, and other sensory input is being now directed in the same direction. And that really helps. It's not just eye contact. A big one is going to be the following, and that's squaring up times two. Sorry, I thought it was math class. Squaring up times two is this. When my head is straight forward from my shoulders, I'm squared up. Now I'm still talking to you, but I'm not squared up. And funnily enough, because I'm not squared up, your brain, without even realizing it, is perceiving what I'm saying as less important than when I do this. So when I'm talking like this, your brain is less likely to remember it, because it seems less important. But by the same thing, can I use you as an example for a moment? Okay. Yeah, you don't have to do anything here, right? I'm squared up times one. But you're not squared up, which means you're way less likely to remember what I'm telling you. Now, if I want to converse with you, let's say I'm your parent, teacher, whatever, and I want you to... No, I told you, don't do anything. Don't do anything, right? I want us both to be squared up, but I should not make you square up. Actually, I am going to make you square up, but I'm not going to tell you. We're now squared up times two. I didn't need her to do anything. Actually, she did do something, but I just had to move myself. Unfortunately, these days, parents and kids tend to communicate it over their shoulder and over the back of the sofa. And the kid goes, Well, the parent goes, hey, please put away the milk when you're done with the TV show. Okay, Mom. They both know exactly what they're talking about. I'm jumping ahead of myself. But later on, it's going to make sense that this conversation happened in that working memory. But there's very unlikely that it ever made its way into long-term memory. And we'll get back to more of that later. So, squaring up times two really helps direct those senses. Also, the more senses you can get involved in learning the information you need to learn, the more information you're getting. Your eyes can only get so much. If your ears can get it too, great. If your hands can get it, great. Which is why most people learn way more from taking notes than having a handout. Because you now learned it by writing too. Actually, when you learn it by writing as well, you're actually using three senses. For most points of view, verbal content in our brain tends to work as an extra sense. So when you listen to a speaker and you write, you get the motor part, you get the listen part, but you actually get an extra verbal part. Our brain's own verbal stuff works as a sense in this sense. Ooh, that didn't mean for that pun. Works as a sense in a sense. That's getting nonsensical. Okay. Now, here's one of my pet peeves. Five senses. It's not five senses. Yes, we got hearing, seeing, tasting, smelling, touching. But you got lots of other senses than that. And the more senses you can get involved, the better. Yes, there are more senses than that. Things like, if I lift this chair, do I get a sense of its weight? Is touch giving me that sense? No, it's not. The muscle tension in my arms is giving me that. It's one of the many kinesthetic senses. If you ever have a kid or yourself have sensory processing issues and sensory issues, you would know all about it. Because you wouldn't be needing to use those senses more to help the other senses coordinate. Okay. So, another principle, too, is that we need enough sensory input. If I'm too boring and not interesting enough, you will start falling asleep. Notice I move a lot. That's because I'm fidgety. But it also does keep people more engaged. Because if I say exactly the same information and I'm just standing like this and your head doesn't have to move at all, your eyes don't have to move at all, and if I start talking a lot like this and my modulation isn't even there, and then I get rid of my accent, you would fall asleep. But that's because it's actually not demanding enough and you don't have to use enough senses. We need enough sensory input to keep us awake. That's why when most kids are starting to shake their leg in class or start flicking a bottle and the teacher, hey, stop flicking the bottle, you need to focus on your schoolwork, the teacher is wrong. They're flicking the bottle so that they can focus on the schoolwork. Asking them to stop flicking the bottle means they're no longer focusing on the schoolwork. Teachers are getting way better at understanding that. Because you need enough sensory input. Of course, if you get way too much sensory input, you get overwhelmed and you start shutting down and now you don't remember or learn anything. So you need to hit that right level. And we all do things naturally. Whenever I play poker, which is rare these days, half the guys and girls around the table are flicking some kind of coin between their fingers or whatever because we're sitting still and focusing for 5 hours. We need some stimulation to stay awake in order to play at least decently. For me, that decently would be a big bump up. Okay, so information from our senses get passed into the processing centers. Now, we really need those processing centers because the sensory information you get in is very different than the sensory information that you're noticing. I talked about people having smartphones with devices on them, whatever. Most of you have probably done the following. You've taken a picture, and before you post it on Facebook to brag about it, you hit some kind of filter on it. Maybe you cleared it up, you changed the color or whatever. Well, our brain does that stuff all the time. The visual stimuli we get in is very different from what you're actually perceiving. It gets cleaned up. What you hear is very different than what your ears are actually picking up. It gets cleaned up before you get to perceive it. It has to go through the processing centers. A lot of errors in misunderstanding things or getting the wrong impression sometimes comes in that getting cleaned up incorrectly. One of the places we most clearly notice it would be in your peripheral vision. Our peripheral vision is extremely bad. But it tends to be quite good in a place you know well. Like, if I sit in my office, there's stuff in my periphery that I can see really clearly. Except I can't see it clearly. It's just my brain knows what's there. So it's able to clean up the image really, really well. Yes. So, back here is your visual centers, which is why if you get a knock in the back of the head or in the front, you might see stars. Things we hear gets processed around here. Smell, and to some extent taste, is up there at the roof of your mouth, essentially. That's why it's hard to point to. Most of our senses are processed in a different place than animals. For most animals, their senses are processed in their midbrain because to some extent, they don't have much more than the mid and hindbrain. The outer cortex is something we have that is very underdeveloped in most animals. And most of our senses have been rerouted out there, which makes them very sophisticated and tends to make most of our senses relatively calm. Which is going to sound like a weird word for you to use for it. It will make more sense in just a second here. But there's one sense that still, for us humans, is being processed in our midbrain. And that's smell. But in our midbrain is also our emotional sensor, the center, and is also our memory switchboard is in our midbrain. Which is probably not then a coincidence that smell is the most powerful for provoking emotions and for provoking memories. So smell can be a powerful way of storing memories. Probably was about 5 years ago now, I was at Festival Food and found this gingerbread cookie thing and I grabbed that we bought and like, wow, I'm like, I remember this Swedish gingerbread cookie kind. I grew up with that. And I had a bite, and my eyes started tearing up because memories were just flooding back. Now you might have said, that was taste. No, it wasn't taste. Actually, 70% of what we think of as taste is not actually taste, it's smell. That's why if you have a bad cold or something or on certain medications, things don't taste right. It's because you're not getting the same smell out of it. Okay. Okay. Many years ago, I got a concussion. Some of you already know this, but many years I've had a concussion. That was not a fun period of time that followed after that. I'm not entirely symptom-free yet. I had to go back on medications a few months ago because on days like this, with a snowstorm coming, my head goes all fuzzy. And concussion symptoms come back. And for most intents and purposes, on nights like this, I have sensory processing issues as a result of that. But one of the things that happened that illustrates something I talked about earlier. Early on, while I was recovering from a concussion, I was sitting in our living room, and I would see our dog, a brown labradoodle, wonderful dog, running through the room on my left. And then I went looking for the dog, except the dog was locked up in the kitchen. And over the next few days, this happened a couple of more times. What's going on is that processing center that I'm talking about doing what it's supposed to, but making the wrong guesses. Because it has memories of seeing my brown dog run through the room. And so what was actually going on as, I didn't know it yet, but I actually had an eye injury too. But the concussion symptoms were masking the fact that I had an eye injury. And at least half of this audience have what's called floaters. We all get them with time. I had not yet had floaters, but I did now. My brain wasn't used to that. So when I had floaters go by in my peripheral vision, my brain pulled up its memory of what that most likely will be, and it would see my dog run through the room. Is that a hallucination? Technically speaking, psychotic? No. But our processing center is using your past memories to make very quick judgment of what's going on, and will now give you clear images, even if they're not. Because what gets passed on to your consciousness becomes clear. Okay. Just like I talked about earlier, that it's useful that the more senses you get involved, the better. The more different processing centers you get involved, the better. Now, well, isn't that the same thing as senses? No, a wonderful thing we can do as humans is we can access processing centers in our mind. So I'll give an example of how you can do that. Let's say you can use it for memorizing things from the past, but let's talk about what's called proactive memory. That's when you need to remember something for the future. That's an example of using a technique for that. Let's say you just realized, oh, when I get home later today, I need to remember to feed my cat. It's out of my routine because I usually feed it earlier, but I haven't been able to go home. I have to remember to feed the cat. Well, if you really need to remember that, then I suggest you close your eyes. You imagine what your house apartment looks like the moment you walk in the door. By the way, I'm deliberately picking a place that is where you need to remember it. Because it doesn't help you to remember it at some other point. Like, if I need to make a doctor's appointment for myself, when I'm at home, I remember to do that, but the doctor's office is closed. Then I tell myself before I go to work, I have to make the appointment. I go to work. I do not think about scheduling that doctor's appointment. The moment I come back home, I think about calling the doctor. But the doctor's office is now closed. And so it repeats. But so what you will do is, yes, you need to put something in your mind that puts you where you need to remember it. And you can put like an image of walking in that door into the house, and on top of the kitchen table, if that's one of the first things you would see, there's this humongous, giant tiger that hops down and eats you. And if you planted that image vividly in your head, I can almost guarantee you that you would remember to feed the cat when you come home. And the crazier and wilder of an image you create, the more likely you are to remember it. But I just used visual processing center of my brain to create a signal for me for the future. And if I learn something verbal and just through hearing it, I can still create vivid images in my head for me to remember it down the line. The more processing centers you can get involved, the more likely you are to learn it. If you can act it out with your hands, if you can sing it, if you can write it, if you can paint it, if you can use your arms, whatever, the more processing centers you can get involved, the more likely you are to remember it. But we're in a highly verbal culture, so we tend to just focus on reading or hearing. And by the way, reading is not visual. Reading is auditory. That makes sense. It's a visual signal, but very rarely do you actually remember the sight of the word. You remember the word. Okay. Now, some of the information in the processing center, once the brain has massaged it, tried to extract what's just most important, that gets passed onto your working memory. Here's the problem. your working memory is super, super, super tiny. Its working memory is how much information can you hold in your mind at one time. And it's almost nothing. If I give you one-digit numbers like 1, 9, 5, 3, 2, and ask you to repeat them back to me, if I give you 5 numbers, you, most of you are with me. 6 numbers, I've lost a lot of you. 7 numbers, I've lost most of you. 8 numbers, I'm not sure any of you would. But that tells you how tiny working memory is. And that's when you didn't have to work the numbers. You just had to repeat them back. You didn't have to add them together or move them around. Or I asked you, I'm going to give you some number. Can you say them back in order? Like 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever they were. Yeah, good luck. That's how tiny a working memory is. But to a large extent, it's only what makes its way, it's mostly only what makes its way into working memory that will make its way into long-term memory. That's why it's also so important that you're selective with what you're attending to. That's one of the major reasons that the research is getting pretty clear about multitasking, because there's been a lot of research on multitasking in the last 10 years. Why is that? Because we're wondering about the repercussions of this. And the results are getting clear that, unless you're talking something like driving, people can actually usually do two things at once pretty well. Can people play a game on their phone and watch a TV show at the same time? Funnily enough, absolutely. Doesn't seem to get in the way a whole lot. It works. Now you ask them later, so tell me about what happened in the TV show. Oh, it was cool. Yeah, what happened? There were some guys, and it was a crime. Someone died, and I think they called the killer. Who was the killer? It was either that guy or that guy. What do we do about multitasking? It severely limits memory. So studying something while watching TV, bad idea. Someone can be multitasking and might be able to have a full conversation with you while they're multitasking, but the chances that they remember all the information you gave them is very slim. And mind you, when you interact with someone, you're interacting with their working memory. You're not interacting with their long-term memory, unless you're specifically asking about the past. Why is that so important? It's because when you interact with other people and they seem to understand what you're saying and they can even repeat it back to you, that only guarantees that it was in their working memory. It doesn't guarantee that it's now in their long-term memory. And there's a big difference. So the kid is on the video game controller and you interact with them in their working memory and they can repeat back to you what they said. Yes, they understood what you said. But that does not mean it's in long-term memory. And having put down that controller will have greatly increased the chance it did make its way into long-term memory. Okay. Working memory only lasts about 10 to 30 seconds. That is if you don't rehearse it. 5, 6, 9, 5, 6, 9, 5, 6, 9, 5, 6, 9, 5, 6, 9, 5, 6, 9. Okay, you can keep doing that and then keep it there. But without the rehearsal, it's like 5 to 30 seconds. 5, 6, ah, shoot. Now I have to change my bike lock. Yes. Okay. By the way, size of your working memory is heavily affected by sleep. If you don't get good sleep, your working memory is smaller. But let's start talking about long-term memory. The permanent storage into long-term memory happens while you sleep, which means you have a good day of learning and bad night's sleep. It turned into a bad day of learning. Almost no companies do weekend retreats and seminars anymore. It used to be all the rage because you didn't have to shut down the factory or whatever or during the week. But they almost never do it anymore because the research is clear. People don't learn. They go to seminars all Saturday. They get lots and lots of good information. They really love this information they get. They stay up partying Saturday night. And most of that information disappears. And the next day, they're so tired or hungover that because of a low working memory and otherwise not working brain and memory banks, they're not storing much from the next day. So weekend retreats for companies for trainings usually turn out to be a waste. So as a result, very few companies do it anymore, although there was a long time that's what companies did. One quick note, I'm getting over time even though I've already extended it. Type 2 dyslexia, it's actually related to memory, working memory. Type 2 dyslexia is a form of dyslexia I hate because it tends to not get caught by the school system. Very often the kid now ends up in an EBD room when they should be in an LD room or stay in a mainstream school and get other help. Type 2 dyslexia is always been there, but you tend to not see the effects before somewhere between second and fifth grade. The reason for it is in type 2 dyslexia, they have a short working memory. It's smaller than most others. In around second grade or the next few grades, the math problems and the sentences they're reading are getting longer than their working memory. So when they get to the end of the sentence, the beginning of the sentence is gone, which means they can read the sentence 10 times and still not understand it. The reason it doesn't get caught by school is because up until this point, they had no reading problems. But I keep getting kids I see for therapy and been having issues in school, and oh yeah, she was good with reading, but then suddenly stopped. When did it stop? Second grade, uh-huh. And let me guess, math suddenly became a problem too, didn't it? Yeah, how did you know? Let me give you some digits and see how we can repeat them back. And of course, that makes it hard to learn and remember all of these other things. Okay. Keep in mind, now we're going to go to long-term memory. A big thing in putting things into long-term memory, there's actually two things to long-term memory, is encoding and retrieval. Encoding means putting it into long-term memory in such a way that you can take it back later. And that means when you learn something, if you can connect it to things you've learned before, the more things you've learned before you can connect it to, the easier it is for you to bring it up later. My wife runs the library at our church, one of her three jobs. And one of the things she has to do is she needs to cross-catalog things. Because a book that gets cataloged under just one category, even though it's the correct category, will almost never be checked out, even if it would be useful to a lot of other people. And the book will tend to start getting forgotten. Just like a library file, the more categories you can cross-reference something in your brain, the more past experiences you connect it to, the easier it is to pull it back later on when you need it. Because it's not just about getting it in there. That's actually the smaller issue. The bigger issue is, have I put it in there in such a way that I can bring it back out again? That also means it greatly helps to learn something in more than one place. For example, like, wow, that talk was really cool, but I don't remember enough. I want to make sure that I remember everything that Dr. Clausen said. I secretly just love listening to his accent, but that's my excuse. So I'm going to sneak back into Lakeland Care District, and I'm going to sit in that locale, and I'm going to listen to what he uploaded to his website. Don't do that, because you should listen to it somewhere else all day for the next year. No, I'm not saying that. But the more different places you can learn the same thing, the more it gets cataloged in our brain. By the way, one of the primary ways our brain catalogs things is by emotion. Particularly during trauma, when things are really scary, our brain might almost totally shut down its ability to catalog. But it will always catalog for emotion, which is when you're scared or nervous or feel hurt, you suddenly start remembering all of these other episodes of feeling scared or hurt that you haven't thought about in years. Well, what do those things have to do again together? They were both cataloged under scared or hurt. And there was nothing else to bring it up. But now he had the same feeling, and he comes back. We tend to remember better things that happen the same in similar circumstances or emotions as when we learn them. Now, I'm already getting way over time here, so I can when people get a little older, or they have some concussions, or whatever happens, our memory can get affected. The best ways to keep the memory alive is good diet. Keep exercising. Whether that's silver sneakers on the Y or whatever it is, keep exercising, keep getting the blood flow going. But just as important, exercise the mind frequently and exercise memory frequently. Actually, a problem we're getting with the younger generation is that they're not exercising memory. And a problem we're getting with the younger generation when it comes to a memory is that they've learned that they can find everything on Wikipedia, which also often means that the brain turns off to learning things. But over time, that can also lose them the ability or reduce their ability to actually remember stuff. But often they're quite correct. But I could just look it up online. You're right. But you're also not exercising your ability to learn and keeping that alive. But with age, and really across any age, the more you exercise your mind, particularly memorizing, whether it's memorizing Bible verses or names of past generations in your family or whatever, just memorization itself helps. But it really helps to practice your memory too if you practice what I've been preaching about several times over today, and that is to connect it to things from your life, create wild memories. There's reasons why Greek, more so than Roman, but also Roman myths and stuff stayed in our culture for a really long time, because they weren't just stories. They had vivid pictures of heroes and monsters and things going on, and so we're sticking with people. When we can connect it to these stories, we remember even complex things so much better. Any final questions? We're way over time, so yes!
What about losing word retrieval and name retrieval skills, things that you remembered?
Mm-hmm. Using.
You can't remember at the moment that you needed.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, what's that word? It's on the tip of my tongue. I just can't. Oh! I hate that.
Names of people that you know, but.
But it just can't come to your mind. Usually, yes. And how do you do that? And how do you fix that? Part of it is being patient with yourself. And keeping in mind the following, it takes longer, particularly over time, for our memory banks to come online. So give yourself more time and be patient with it. And instead of, and ironically, the more flustered and annoyed you would get you with yourself of not thinking of it, the less likely you are to be able to think of it. So relax and think of things around it. Yes. But then, yeah, practice people's names and find mnemonic devices for it. When I get some new clients or whatever, a lot of new clients are like, might say things a little weird, but I almost make some kind of weird comment about their name. But now I remember it. I'm like, oh, that's German, doesn't it? That means silver nail, doesn't it? I don't know. Well, okay, I'll tell you then. Your name means silver nail. That's really cool. But now I'll never forget that name, and I'll probably never forget the spelling either. So find new ways of thinking about them. But do notice, which tends to be the case in that sense, you still remember the person. And you still remember the concept. If you can't think of the exact word or their exact name, that's not all that serious. It's when you don't start forgetting them. One final thing, and then we have to wrap up because I'm already overstaying my welcome. I'm getting evil glances at me. Thing is, I like evil glances, so it's really reinforcing me. Some people often ask me if I do a talk on memory, something like that, is this. It's not all that common, but it does sometimes happen with dementia, and that's what's called imposter syndrome. And sometimes I get spouses that contact me, and they're so upset because, my wife's dementia, I've been dealing with it, but she recognizes me, but she doesn't think it's me. Like, that's my husband. I know that's my husband, but he's not him. It's just someone that looks like him or in a replacement. And actually, it makes sense, and I'm going to explain why. We have a recognition. There's a part of the brain reserved for recognizing faces. That's at the bottom of our brain. It also recognizes other shapes, but it's highly sophisticated. But that part of the brain, which is the same as for actually many other brain structures, it has a path to our emotion system. So that when you recognize someone you know, you actually have an emotional reaction. But when that pathway gets degraded due to the changes with dementia, the person will now still recognize the person, but there's no emotional reaction. And the logical conclusion is they look like the person, but they're not that person because they don't feel like that person. They now look more like a mannequin, someone that behaves like them, but it doesn't feel like them. Heartbreaking. But it is as simple as you're getting a lesion or damage to that one pathway. Okay, thanks for being a great audience. Hope you'll remember this, and take care.